Welcome to the Property Management Mastermind Show with your host, Brad Larson. Brad owns one of the fastest growing property management companies in San Antonio, Texas. This podcast is for property managers by property managers. You'll hear from industry leading professionals on best practices, new ideas, success stories, and lessons learned. This is your opportunity to learn about the latest industry buzz surrounding property management, as well as tips and strategies to improve your business. Now here's your host, Brad Larson.
This episode of the Property Management Mastermind Show is sponsored by Lead Simple and 4.5. They have teamed up to come up with one of the best conferences for anyone in or around the property management industry to attend. It's called the PM Grow Summit. This conference is laser focused on growth strategies and thought leaders from around the country. Now, I personally attended their PM Grow Summit last year and was truly impressed with the format, the venue, the quality speakers, and the level of attendance. And that was just their first year putting it on. This year's PM Grow Summit will be held in San Diego in early 2018, and it's shaping up to look like another fantastic event you will not want to miss. I've already booked my spot for the conference, and I would encourage listeners to do the same. You can learn more by going to pmgrowsummit.com. As an additional incentive, you can enter in the promo code BRAD, B-R-A-D, to get a $100 discount when booking your ticket. If you ever need an excuse to go to San Diego and stay at one of the historic downtown hotels, this is your chance. Do not miss this event. Again, go to pmgrowsummit.com and enter in the promo code BRAD for a $100 discount on admission. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Property Management Mastermind Show. I'm your host, Brad Larson, and in this interview, I'm going to be talking to Allison DeSaro from Seacoast Commerce Bank. And I filmed this and recorded this session at the NARPM National Convention in Orlando, Florida, here just recently in October of 2017. It was a fairly pretty good conference. I was with the family quite a bit over at the Disney World, so that distracted me from some good things. But the golf was great, the weather was great. It was an overall good conference. There were a couple things though that bothered me while I was there. And so what you're going to start hearing from me in future podcasts is a bit more commentary on the state of the property management industry, to include some of the trade organizations around it. And there are some things in that organization, in that industry, that are bothering me. And I'm going to start to bring them to your attention so we can all kind of be aware of what's going on. And that way we can make an informed decision of how you want to proceed in booking some of these conferences or not booking some of these conferences. So just kind of stay tuned, and we'll get into that stuff as we get further along. But for now, I wanted to get at least a quick intro done and into the interview with Allison. So what I wanted to at least let you know as well is that we are switching banks. We currently bank with a solution here in the San Antonio, Texas region. I'm not unhappy with the bank, and I'm not fully happy with them, because what Seacoast had to offer was phenomenal. So it wasn't to the point where anything was pushing me away from our current bank. It was more of Seacoast had a lot of great programs that pulled us away and made it a no-brainer type of a decision. So I think you're going to enjoy this interview. It's going to be all the pointed questions you'd want to ask a banker. And so hopefully you can get something out of it. And if you decide to switch to Seacoast, it's one of those good solutions that are out there. It's not for everybody because they aren't in every state, but if they do work in your state, it's a great solution. Would highly recommend it. So let's have a listen. And welcome to another Property Management Mastermind episode. Today, I have Ms. Allison. Ms. Allison, please introduce us.
Thank you. My name is Allison DeSaro. I'm here with Seacoast Commerce Bank. I am headquartered in San Diego, California. However, I do bank pretty much anywhere in the United States, as long as property management companies are allowed to bank out of state.
The first thing we're going to ask is, why are we having a banker on the property management show, sure, right? And this is a mastermind episode. We've all talked about this before. The reason I do these types of shows, these types of podcasts, is because the membership and the fan base that listens to this podcast, they all want to hear the same things that I would ask as a property management company owner. And so first thing we're looking at is banking is boring,
sure,
right?
It is
a very boring subject. It's not flashy. It's not talking about management fees or leasing fees or anything fun. But what they are interested in is money. And this is a very important part of managing the money. And I just cut off your thunder because I had to give the intro. It's like, this is why you're going to want to pay attention to this, gang. So Allison, please keep going on who Seacoast is and what you do.
So what I do, which is what's more attractive to you guys, I specialize in property management.
That's a big thing.
That's a big thing
because it's been very frustrating in my 10-year career of looking at banks, and they ask you, what's a trust account?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
You see it all the time. Mm-hmm. And we've switched twice now. We went from one bank to another bank now who's very good. I mean, I'm very happy with our bank. But some of the things that we're going to be talking about in this particular podcast are why you made a switch to Seacoast Bank. Because I am switching and I'm in the process of switching now, as you know. And we're here at Narpam National in Orlando. You and I are in some conference room somewhere. Mm-hmm. The vendor booth's going downstairs. And we had to get this episode out there because I think it's really important that managers hear what you have to offer.
Well, so keep going. I specialize in the compliance on trust accounts. So I bank close to 400 management companies as of today. And obviously in sales, it's always growing. But that's it. I don't bank anything other than property management companies.
So you are the property
management specialist. You know, there is an umbrella of property management at Seacoast, and one side is HOA, the other side is fee income property management companies. You are the ones who need trust accounts. HOA, completely different world. That's all I do. I do property management, fee income property management companies. So I set up their trust accounts. I keep them in compliance with their region's Department of Real Estate. And I give them benefits as well, which we'll get into. But really, you know, I go out, I speak, I do a lot of speaking engagements in your association and other associations as well in the industry, just discussing how to make sure that you're in a trust account at your current bank, because the majority of banks do not get it right. And I can tell by typically looking at your bank statements and signature cards and maybe two more questions, whether or not you're in a trust account. There's a lot more that goes on behind the scenes to make sure you're in a trust account. But if those few things are not met, I already know that you're not in a trust account.
That's kind of scary in a thought, because a lot of us are assuming, because our bank calls it a trust account in the title, or we relabel it in the software. You know, you go into the banking software and call it trust account, even though it might be just a savings account or even a checking account. Mm-hmm. You're saying we could be out of compliance just by mistaking that.
Absolutely. And what everybody's so afraid of these days, and this is what I always try to hammer home, what everybody's so afraid of is a failed audit by their region's Department of Real Estate. And excuse me if I end up saying BRE. I'm from California and they call it the BRE. But
we won't hold that against you, by the way.
Yeah, thanks. But, you know, everybody's so afraid of a failed audit. And the funny thing is a lot of these audits, and with companies that I brought over that were with another bank and definitely not in a true trust account, they actually pass their audit, because they just go by what the Department of Real Estate says is a trust account. So an auditor, for instance, could come in and just from their naked eye, look at their statements and signature cards and say, oh, this is a trust account. To them, it's a trust account. So you passed your audit. But there are many more risks that happen actually far more often than just a failed audit at a bank. So if you're not in a trust account, you know, you could lose your license. You could lose your entire company. You could lose your clients' money.
It's pretty serious, because a lot of states are doing annual audits, financial audits. I know Oklahoma does. I think Oregon does. I think several other. You could probably rattle them off better than I could. And that is a scary deal.
Yeah.
So the fact that you're compliant in California means that almost all the other states east of California should be okay to use you guys.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, honestly, anybody can use us. Sorry if I'm jumping ahead, but anyone can use us as long as their Department of Real Estate allows them to bank out of state. We're headquartered in California. We're a business bank. We're a very, very successful business bank. You know, people always say, oh, you're a small bank. We're a medium-sized bank. We actually just acquired another business bank. But we have higher Bauer ratings than Wells Fargo, for instance. We're a very, very strong bank. We can bank anywhere, but the difference between us and a bank like, for instance, Wells Fargo, is that we're not going to have a branch in every state. I bank someone as far as Pennsylvania from California. They can bank with me because your industry usually doesn't accept cash. And if you do, then there's ways to get around it by banking out of state. But, you know, we don't actually have a physical branch in Pennsylvania, for instance.
That's a good point. I want to stop you there, because some of the folks may not be on the electronic banking mindset yet. Mm-hmm. And that kind of blows me away, because we've been doing the electronic stuff since day one.
Right.
So the electronic means, if you take in checks, you get a check scanner in the office.
Yep.
What do you call that thing?
It's a check scanner.
Check scanner, but it runs
deposit,
it around in a circle.
Check scanner, yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it runs that check in a circle, and you can put in there 50 at a time, and it enters those checks really fast.
Yep, or ACH.
Correct. ACH is where, you know, for us, for example, I think we're 92% ACH.
Okay.
Because we use AppFolio, and 92% of our customers pay online via ACH. Mm-hmm. And that's a stat you can pull up on AppFolio. It's very easy. It's not just a made-up thing. I would love to be at 100%. But the reality of the business world is not everybody wants to bring in or pay ACH, for example.
Right.
You like to bring in the cashier's checks. I still get the older clientele that want to bring in and see my front desk receptionist, Shay, and here's my, you know, cashier's check for rent. They want to physically, tangibly know they paid rent.
Right.
And that's fine. So I think, I mean, there's some PMs out there that will say, I never have, you know, anybody else other than electronic. You probably talk to them.
Sure. Yeah.
But then there's also some that deal a lot in cash when they start going to the 7-Eleven stores.
Yep.
So you have all
easy. Right. You have that pay near me. You can use pay near me. You can use pay near me with AppFolio. You can use it, I believe, with PropertyWare. I may be misspeaking on that, but I believe that you can. There's ways to get around it. And honestly, if they do want to bring in that cashier's check to you, that goes through a check scanner. So everyone thinks it's just, you know, personal checks that go through a check scanner. It's not. Cashier's checks, money orders, all goes through a check scanner. And in this day and age, let's say, for instance, the image couldn't be read. You can still call your bank and they can pull that image and they can manually encode it anyway.
Yeah,
so you don't need to walk into a branch. And, you know, people, I've had, you know, mom and pop companies who always wanted to stay paper, you know, just paper, no electronic, anything. And once they start adapting it, it's, you know, usually with their software, they're going to try to adapt it anyway. But if they come over to us and, for instance, they've never had a check scanner, they end up loving this thing because now they don't have to pay their employee to go out for an hour to go, you know, deposit checks at the bank and do God knows what else.
Because you have to kick people out of the office once in a while. They walk in with cash and they're like, whoa, timeout. You know, we don't accept any cash.
Right.
And you go down the store, go to HEB, a grocery store, and get us a money order and we'll take that.
Right.
Okay. Good policy to have.
Yeah.
So a couple of things that I would ask as a business owner is being able to use my credit cards and debit cards and all that stuff. And I believe you do have solutions for all that, correct?
Yeah. So just to clarify, you mean using your own debit card for your company, not somebody paying by debit card. Yeah. So we have solutions. We don't have credit card solutions. We would refer you out. That's usually never an issue with us.
Most people just say,
I have a business credit card.
We run a lot of the stuff through the P&L through a, which card is it? Southwest Airlines card.
Yep.
So you get all the points and all that good stuff.
Exactly.
But occasionally we have to have cash.
Right. You want to have that debit card. So what I always suggest, and I think we talked about this a little bit too, is get a debit card attached to your bank. Of course, we have debit cards, but get a debit card attached to your business operating account, not your operating trust. People confuse the two.
The P&L account.
Yeah. Your business operating account and set a small limit. The issue is, honestly, is that most bankers don't tell people this, but a debit card on a business is not... not safe for fraud. So, you know, typically not that a bank is held liable for fraud anyway, but if, for instance, somebody put in your checking account information to buy something or wrote a bad check off of your operating account, the bank is going to basically take the loss on that. They're going to try to get the funds back, but if they can't, they will usually take the loss on it. With business debit card fraud, if somebody actually put in your debit card and there was, you know, fraudulent activity, banks are not held liable for that, and they typically won't take any action to get that money back.
Best practice out there.
So you want to keep your exposure low.
Yeah, we learned that with the last bank. Best practice is if you're going to buy stuff on Amazon, tie it to your business credit card,
that
Southwest Airlines card, not necessarily to your business debit card.
Or if you're paying utilities, for instance, let's say you're paying your gas, you can put in your checking information. People just reach for their debit card because they think that's easiest. Always put in your checking and routing information if you have the option.
Yeah, we do. In a lot of cases we do. Where we like to have that is, as a business owner, I need cash, you know, cash incentives to my staff. And where we are to file an eviction, you have to have cash to go file an eviction with the Justice of the Peace.
That's frustrating. Okay.
So we can't even go down there with a company check.
Yeah.
So you have to go get cash, give it to somebody or a portfolio manager or whomever. They're going to go down to the county courthouse or the Justice of the Peace and actually file an eviction, file a writ of possession. They don't take checks.
Right.
So that's why I've always, hammered on the banking systems. Make sure that we have a means to get cash. And that's a solution that I was concerned about when we had that conversation.
Yeah, certainly. And honestly, also because we don't have branches on every corner, we definitely don't have ATMs on every corner. So we do surcharge reimbursement.
Yeah, that's fine. No one's going to argue on that.
Yeah. I mean, you could go to a casino and rack up, ATM fees. And
I wouldn't do that.
No, I know, but you could, and we're going to reimburse it. So
I see your
point. So we just make sure that the customer's needs are still met, even though we're far from their office.
Let's talk about how you convinced us to switch.
Okay.
All right, let's get right into this, because this is where the rubber meets the road, and everybody needs to start paying attention
at this point.
Because you looked at our financials, you looked at our bank accounts, and you came back with a analysis banking format. Go from there.
Sure. Okay. Well, I came back with an analysis pro forma.
Pro forma.
So what I do is, or what I did in your case, is I took your 3 months of your bank account statements. I take all of your transaction activity and I take your average monthly balance activity, split it out over 3 months, and we'll average it out over 3 months just to ensure that, you know, 1 month wasn't significantly higher than the next. So I put you guys and I put all of my customers in what's called analysis banking. So analysis banking, every bank offers it typically, but it can really work for or against you depending on which bank you're with. So analysis banking allows you to earn credits. It's not interest, but it is calculated the same way as interest. So it allows you to earn credits off of your balances in order to pay for not only bank fees, but then usually in a situation where it really works for you at some banks is you can pay towards third-party invoices. So they have to be eligible invoices are, you know, anything that is considered banking or accounting related with a little bit of a gray area depending on which bank you're with. So big invoices that I always pay for my customers, they're software invoices. They're accounting software. So AppFolio, Propertyware, Buildium, we'll pay those invoices with these credits. CPA invoices, whether it's for the owner of the company or the business itself, checks, payroll services. There's a whole long list of things that we'll pay for. A gray area, for instance, would be a postage machine. Those are actually pretty expensive, especially if you're right. If you're not paperless. We're just going to assume that you're paying, you know, your checks, you're paying your owners via check. So we're going to pay for that postage machine. And they're monthly invoices. So what you would do is you would send the invoices to us unpaid. We submit payment directly to the vendor. So it's not interest. We cannot reimburse you. We have to pay it directly to the vendor. And so actually,
let me back up here because I hope everybody gets that out there is you're now paying for our AppFolio bill.
Right. Depending on the relationship.
Well, let's be real upfront. We are with AppFolio and it is for a number of different reasons. All the property management software companies are ideal. They're great. Mm-hmm. They all tailor to each different little thing you might need in your business. We just ended up there, but you're able to actually, there's a bridge or something, right? There's a quick pay system.
Well, so yes. So with AppFolio and Propertyware, we allow them to actually debit our bank account on your behalf. They send us an invoice simultaneously so that we know, you know, they debited us 100 times today with all of these amounts. They send us invoice for each customer so we know who to match it up with. So the credits, and I'll get into the explanation of the credits, but as long as you have the credits, the full invoice is paid without us having to debit your account. Either way, it's going to be paid because it's coming directly from us. But anything outside of those two companies, we have to submit check to the vendor.
Okay. And you're able to talk about
as
numbers
of today.
So like for our examples.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So please share with the audience what you looked at with us and then what you're able to say, okay, we can do this for you.
Okay. So let's come up with a scenario. Okay. So I don't remember yours off the top of my head. So let's say a company, this is analysis banking. So let's say a company comes to me and they have three accounts. They have a business operating account, two trust accounts, one's for security deposits, one for operating trust. You know you don't need to separate the two, but just in this scenario, they did. So let's say that they had $1 million between the three accounts in average collected balances. And let's say their earnings credit rate, this is the analysis rate that everyone talks about. You'll hear them say earnings credit, analysis, net earnings, things like that. So that rate is, in this scenario, 1%. So it's an annual rate, and it's dictated by every month's average collected balances. So let's say their balances every single month were $1 million.
Okay.
They're earning, you know, off the top of my head, roughly around $900 because it's over 12 months. So their gross earnings is $900.
Per month.
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 I got to say that six times because that's where people, they're like stopping their car and pulling over and like trying to write down your phone number.
Yeah.
What? Per month? $900?
But this is the catch, and this is why it can really work against you at some banks, even if they do have a high rate. And most banks don't have a high rate.
They don't.
At all. I mean, you'll see a bank that offers, you know, 0.0 or 0.30 and you think that's a great rate. But let's say that they do have high rates. The next thing you really have to be concerned about is the pricing, because analysis banking is a lot different than an interest-bearing account or a free small business checking account, where you basically start from your very first transaction you're getting charged for. Mm-hmm. So you want to make sure that your pricing on your analysis with your bank is very low. So let's say, and ours is, I will say, ours is the lowest I've ever seen. But, and I bring companies over from all different
kinds of banks. Yeah, if you manage, or if you sponsored 400 some property management companies, you've seen all their
bank
statements and all the different banking scenarios.
Yeah.
And then you've come up with a solution that's better with your company.
Right. So let's say in this scenario, so they have $900. Let's say that their bank fees, and that's including everything they use at the bank, ACH, remote deposit, their three wires, account maintenance wires, anything. Mm-hmm. Let's just say that they were $200. So that $200 in bank fees, the company's not even going to see that cost because their $900 is just going to consume that $200.
So you got like a $900 credit,
$200 credit, debit, $200 debit.
And now that's a balance of $700.
$700,
yeah. And that can be used for a software bill or a CPA bill or something like
that. Right. So they're credits. They're credits. So you just need to start submitting invoices to us and we're going to pay with those credits. And this is each month. So each month that you don't use, let's say, for instance, you send an AppFolio invoice or AppFolio sends an AppFolio invoice for $500. Okay, so that's paid because we know that you have the $700. And then there's a $200 difference. So that $200 balance is going to roll over to the next month. We at our bank do wipe them, back down to zero once a year, and that's mid-December, but then you just start over earning again.
So if you had a $200 credit every month that hasn't been used, and so at the end of the year, you have a $1,200 balance, you could submit a CPA bill.
Yes.
Or something else to make up for. So it's kind of like use or lose.
It is use or lose, but a lot of banks will do monthly use or lose. So you use it that month. If whatever's left over doesn't get carried forward, we do for our property management companies.
Well, that's a big deal. That's kind of chintzy to not
do that. Yeah. Yeah, it is. But, again, this is really a product that a lot of banks don't want to be using anymore because, they can lose a lot of money. It depends on how they make their money. And a lot of banks make their money in different ways. It really benefits us to hold your deposits. So we're going to give you a benefit back.
Sure. It's a 10-to-1, right?
Exactly. Yeah, yeah, exactly. So, let's say, for instance, you had $1,200 in, early December. I'm going to be reaching out to you as your relationship manager, as I do all my clients, saying, hey, this is what you have left over. This is your cutoff time to submit invoices for this year. Otherwise, it's going to reset to zero and you'll start earning again.
Yeah, we won't miss that.
Yeah, you won't miss that boat.
Yeah. So let me break it down. So let me kind of show this to people. So we manage just shy of 800 homes and right about $1 million in cash collected and all that stuff with trusts and security deposits. Mm-hmm. So essentially this is going to pay for our AppFolio bill.
Yep.
That's what it really means. Because people might be wondering out there, what does that really mean? So essentially by using Seacoast, my AppFolio bill is getting covered.
Right.
And if that's $700 a year, $800 a month, whatever it's going to be, that's pretty significant money. And that's that caused us to look to switch because we're with Business Bank of Texas in San Antonio, and they're great. I have no problems with them, but they don't have this. They can't offer this. Yeah. And we even confirmed it, as a parallel. You just switched over Kevin Knight with Liberty Management, and he's been working with you guys for 6+ months. Mm-hmm. Called Kevin the other day. I said, hey, Kev, so what's going on with Seacoast? He's like, oh, yeah, they're great. And then you, before we started this podcast, said, well, they're not even using the full benefits yet. Let me tell you more. Yeah.
And now they will be. They sure are. But yeah, there's so much more available to them.
Now I got
to
hear it. Keep going.
Well, so there's these credits, right? So people don't realize, I moved over and these credits are just accruing. They don't know whether they're being used or not because they haven't set anything up. For instance, if they're using AppFolio. So now I'm going to actually submit a payment authorization to AppFolio on your behalf. And say once you get settled and moved over, say, okay, now everything moving forward is going to come to me. So with app, and I'm just using AppFolio as a reference because that's who you use. But so they can only have one payment method on file. So whatever you have now is just going to get wiped away because I'm going to submit an authorization letter in order to have them put our account on there. They're going to now debit us. So back to the analysis real quick. Let's say, for instance, AppFolio debited you or debited me $1,000 and you only had $700 available in credits that month, we're still paying that full invoice. So nothing is going to get kicked back, rejected, anything like that. Unless of course we didn't have an invoice to match.
You pay our invoice.
We're going to pay the full invoice. And then we're just going to debit you guys. So the same way that you would pay it anyway, we're going to make sure that you can, take advantage of everything you can with your credits, and then you just pay the rest. So a lot of people, and I get this a lot because people are so unfamiliar with the service, people will say, oh, well, I was just waiting for an invoice that matched exactly what I had in credits. Well, you never know if that day will come. So we're just going to pay it anyway and just debit you the difference.
And this works with all softwares?
All softwares.
Yeah. Okay.
As long as they accept check, because that full.
Most of them do. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they might do some sort of invoice directly. I mean, sure, if you're with Buildium or one of the other ones that we haven't mentioned in this podcast yet, I'm sure there's a way to work that.
Right.
Because that's one of those credits that'll work out.
Yeah. And actually, I stand corrected. Buildium is another one that I do it with. So Buildium, Propertyware, and AppFolio.
That's typically the big three. I know there's a few others out there. I hate to short anybody out there. But those are the biggest that we've seen. Rent managers coming up. There's a, you know, there's Yardi. There's a couple others that are really coming into the space. But I think those three are the kind of the mass X or the most common ones that people are using.
This episode of the Property Management Mastermind Show is sponsored by Mark Cunningham of Grace Property Management. Now, Mark has created some amazing products for property management companies. We have implemented his systems and his business income streams into our business here, and I can personally recommend them. If you're in the property management business, I encourage you to visit their website, as you'll definitely find a product that will improve your business. I know Mark personally, and just a small investment to pick up one of his golden nuggets could earn you a return many times over. To learn more, go to propertymanagementsystem.org, again, propertymanagementsystem.org, and to get a 10% discount on all of Mark's products, use the promo code BRAD, B-R-A-D.
So let's kick into a couple of different things. So we've talked about switching. Now let's talk about the pain of switching. How do you guys help us do that? Because it's one thing to hear this and be a good idea, but it's like, You've never switched softwares before like we have.
Yes, I've switched
softwares, and I would rather do a lot of different things, you know, than switch softwares.
Sure. Well, I mean, but remember, I only bank management companies. So I always consider myself more in your industry than I am in my own. And I've seen a lot of my clients go through the software transition. So I do have an idea of what it takes. I mean, it can take months and months. Sometimes it even takes a year. I know what goes into it. And I always actually compare the two. Because someone will say, oh, it's going to be so cumbersome. I don't want to go through the change. And I always say, if you've done a software change, forget it, because that has nothing to do with what we're doing now. So what I do, and again, I think this just all circles back to the point that I only bank management companies. So I make sure that everything goes by your industry timeline. I know your industry timeline. And I make a very industry-specific transition timeline, which I did for you. So what would happen is if someone came to me, let's say someone came to me today, what is it, October 18th?
18th.
So if someone came to me today and said, I want to go live. We did the proposal process. We did all that. I want to go live with you guys. I want to transition over. So now I would say, okay, the earliest I can get you on rent cycle would be December 1.
So it's about a 45-day out system.
It is, but only because when we talk about, you know, switching over and target dates, we're always going to talk about the first of the month because we want to be live and for a target rent cycle. So let's say we're going with December 1. Realistically, we're actually going live about 2 weeks prior to that. So we'll talk about December 1 because of the rent cycle, but we're actually going to set a date based on, you know, when you do your owner draws and all that, sometime around mid-November to switch you over. So I create this timeline. So someone comes to me today and says, okay, I want to move over. I say, okay, December 1 is the earliest we can go. So they start submitting entity information to me really today, or this week, around this week, we get their articles of incorporation, if they're incorporated. However they're structured, we get their entity information, their signer information, and they go on their merry way, and we start creating signature cards and agreements based on what they need. If they need check scanner, if they need ACH, wires, things like that. So we create all of that, and then we get that back to them before the 1st of November, because we want to leave you alone during your rent week. So we get that back to you, we have you sign it, get that back to us. So you go through rent week, and then as soon as, you know, you come up for air before your owner draws, we give you a letter to submit to your software, depending on which software you're with. But for instance, you guys are with AppFolio. So I'm going to submit a letter to you to give to AppFolio saying these new trust accounts have been opened and, you know, being prepared for a bank switch. Here are the accounts. They're going to start underwriting them. But you're going to tell them that they just need to start underwriting. They're not going to actually activate these accounts. So you can continue on accepting payments and such into your current bank account through the month of November. So
one of the bottom lines here is that you walk us through it.
Walk you through everything.
And
I mean, I create date by date timeline.
Okay.
And we talk about 45 days, but really it's maybe a total of 3 days that you're actually doing work. Mm-hmm. The main thing, and this is what I always just need to tell everyone, is when we pick that date, let's say, for instance, you do your owner draws on the 10th, I'm going to say, okay, somewhere between the 12th and, I mean, depending on the month, but somewhere between the 12th and the 22nd, we're going to set a live target date. Tell AppFolio that's the date that we want to activate accounts. And right, let's say, for instance, we chose the 20th of that month. I would come in, or, you know, someone, we would do the check scanner install and all that, but your bookkeeper needs to actually reconcile accounts right up to that day. That's the biggest thing. That's what makes it go smooth.
Any concerns with end of year, first of year? Does it matter any which month?
No. And yeah, it matters with software. Doesn't matter with us.
Okay. Because a lot of people want to switch softwares.
Yeah.
They want to try and do that at the end of the year. Mm-hmm. So they would only be pushing out one 1099 to their owners from one software. Because we did the switch, and we switched from X to, you know, X, and we had to send out two 1099. So it was kind of cumbersome. So, I mean, I know you can combine them. There's math you can do and make one 1099. But you're pulling from software one and software two, and then you have to combine that. It was really kind of a pain.
Right.
But remember, so there's no concern
like
that.
You're not getting 1099s from
That's
us.
That's right. Yeah.
I mean, this is not – these earnings credits are not interest. It's not an accounting issue. We're not sending out 1099s for that. Yes, if a company had all these interest-bearing accounts, then maybe they may want to consider something. But there's, off the top of my head, maybe one or two states that do it that way. So,
and we run full accounts. So we have checking accounts, savings account, trust accounts.
Yep.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Those are the big three I'm thinking of. Yep. What else am I missing?
That's it, really. I mean, for the accounts-wise, yeah, that's what you would want. I mean, you really – the trust account is a checking account. It's a checking account, but it's set up how, you know, the thing is that everyone, again, like I said, worries about what it's supposed to look like for their Department of Real Estate audits. But we need to worry about what it looks like for the federal regulators.
Oh, right.
So we have to make sure it's set up as a trust account. I mean, even if you had a family, and I'm sure I'm confusing people here, but even if you had a family trust, for instance, and you went and opened up an account under, you know, Brad Larson Family Trust.
Oh, we do have one, by the way.
Yeah. You know, dated eight, whatever. That's still a checking account, but it's a different kind of checking account. It's a trust checking account.
Yeah. On the trust line. So I wrote, I scribbled 250 because I want to remind myself that there's the FDIC secures up to 250. Mm-hmm. So this is a good idea, Ferry, that I'm blindsiding you with. Do people need to split trust accounts when they get the 251?
No, and I'm so glad you asked that, because this is another one, another point that I always try and talk about whenever I, you know, go out and speak on this subject. A trust account should be insured $250,000 per beneficiary.
That's what I have heard.
Yes.
So it's like, unless your owner that you manage 10 properties for has more than $250,000 in assets that you're controlling,
then
there's a problem.
Right.
In my space, in single family homes, that's nobody.
No.
Unless you're managing a, you know, 500 unit apartment complex or something crazy.
Sure, right.
And then you wouldn't be listening to this podcast anyway.
Yeah. Well, you know, then you're typically not holding all security deposits. You're letting the owner hold them, maybe.
That's right.
And money's going in and out. So for rents and all that. So you it's really rare to get into a situation like that. But, you know, this goes back to one of the many reasons why you need to make sure you're going to write in a true trust account. Because if you're just in an account where your banker says, oh, yeah, it's an account, and, you know, we labeled it trust, it's not FDIC insured. So up to the, you know, the max amount that it can be.
Okay.
It's only FDIC insured up to $250,000. And that's not even just that one trust account. Let's say, for instance, you have another account under your corporate TIN, and it's your operating account, and that has $100,000 in it. It's your corporate TIN across the bank that has to be insured. So let's say the FDIC, for instance, goes in and they pull, you know, because maybe your bank's failing or something, and they pull your corporate TIN. They're going to see your operating account, what you consider your P&L. They're going to see a couple other accounts, and then they're going to see your trust account. You have two trust accounts, so they're going to see those two trust accounts. And they're going to say, okay, this entire corporate TIN has, I'm just going to throw out a random number, has $1 million in it.
Yeah.
Only $250,000 of this is insured, because these two accounts are not actually true trust accounts.
So they're mislabeled. You could really, really be hurting yourself and potentially your owners if there was a bank failure.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
Okay.
I mean, we're probably getting into more information than anyone cares to know. But yes, if your bank is going to be failing, you're A, going to know about it about 6 months ahead of time.
Okay.
And B, you know, a receiver would come in if the bank failed. The FDIC would come in, a receiver for the FDIC would come in, and they would basically sell your deposits to another bank, maybe, I don't know, 30 cents on the dollar or something. Mm-hmm. So they will go to another bank, unless, God forbid, another bank didn't want to buy the deposits, but that's very rare.
Yeah, and you guys are climbing the ladder as far as size and strength and, you know, as far as the safety factor. You know, yeah. Everybody wants to go with a medium size to a large bank.
Yeah. Large doesn't mean safe.
That's what I'm saying.
Large doesn't mean safe.
The small banks, you got the mom and pop local banking, yeah. You know, Carroll, Iowa Bank of something, you know, where I grew up in Carroll, Iowa.
Okay.
And the other side of that is like the Bank of America, where everybody has that dirty taste in their mouth from, you know, all those big players on the far right.
Or the Wells
right.
Fargo, all the stuff that they just went through. I mean, that significantly impacted a lot of property management companies, because in certain states, you can't have, for instance, interest on your checking accounts, on your trust accounts. Mm-hmm. And Wells Fargo is just attaching interest to these accounts because...
I know Kevin was with Chase, Kevin mm-hmm. Knight. He was with Chase, and he switched to you guys, and he was getting killed on the fees. You know, and
I don't remember specifically, but everybody who I've ever moved over from Chase has been getting killed on the fees.
And it's great that they're, you know, giant, they have branches everywhere, et cetera. So what are some of the states that you just can't touch?
So can't work in Florida.
Okay.
Even Bummer. Lovely Florida where we are today.
Yeah.
Their Department of Real Estate doesn't allow them to bank out of state. I do bank in Florida, but those are just HOA management companies. There's no specialty involved in that.
Any lobbying actions coming up that might go into the state of Florida?
Not that I know of.
I mean, it's like get into the modern times, allow for out-of-state banking, or are they just trying to keep all the money in Florida?
I think they're probably just trying to keep all the money in Florida. Okay. I mean, so some states, it's not necessarily just about keeping the money. And this may be the same case for Florida, actually, now that I think about it. The thing is the Department of Real Estate wants to know that if we want to audit your accounts, that we can go to a bank in Florida and get the rights to audit those accounts. So for instance, Arizona
might be coming into play.
Yeah. So Arizona has that law, but they can get around it. The management, and I bank many companies in Arizona. The management company just... has to disclose in their management agreements that they're, you know, with a bank out of state. We actually are in Texas and Arizona, but they're not full service branches. They're just locations. Mm-hmm. So they need to say that they're with a bank out of state. And in addition to that, the bank has to sign a letter, which we have 100 times over, sign a letter for them to keep on file. So in the event that they're ever audited and they wanted to actually subpoena the statements, we're saying, you know, in much broader terms, but we're saying, yes, we will give those statements to you. We will give that bank.
Send us a subpoena to this email, to this attorney.
And we're already telling you that we'll do it.
Correct.
So, you know, some states will allow you to get around it that way. Some states won't. So Nevada won't. We actually do so much business in Nevada, but not on the property management side. We have multiple locations in Nevada, but because it's not a full service branch, they want a brick and mortar branch there. So we can't bank there.
So Nevada's a no-go,
Oregon,
Florida's a no-go.
Florida, Nevada, Oregon.
Okay.
And Utah are like the four that off the top of my head.
Yeah.
Some states you can, some states you can't. Even some states you don't even need a license to be a property management company. So So those states you can do it really whatever you want unless there are, you know, tenant security deposit laws.
Do you see those changing anytime, or is that very state specific?
Very state specific.
Okay.
Very
so there's state no specific. There's no new legislation that you know of coming around the corner that's going to free up the banking world forever and ever.
Nothing that I know of. It's really, you know, when we talk about it, and we actually are, we're probably going to go more national than we are now pretty soon, our bank. And it really comes down to, okay, do we want to open, you know, for instance, do we want to open an office? Some banks, it's like, as long as you have, they say, you know, as long as you have a presence here, even if it's just a loan production office, you can bank here. It doesn't need to be a full service branch. So do we want to open offices in more states? We have offices across
you start expanding.
12
you go,
different states right now.
But, open an office in Oregon, open an office in Utah, Florida, et cetera.
Well, Oregon, we have an office in Oregon.
Okay.
We have an office in Utah, but those states specifically want a full service branch. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's odd.
Yes.
Full service could be kind of gray.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's very antiquated, some of these rules, as you probably can agree with. I think most people would say, oh, these rules are so old school, depending on which state they're in. But, you know, we can only do so much. So.
Yeah, I'm sure.
And if there's a way to get around it, we'll know if there's a way to get around
it. Yeah, I'm sure there's a team of attorneys on your side looking at different avenues to potentially expand. Because the more this expands and the more people start, the more management companies start to realize this. I mean, there's 6,000 plus NARPA members. There's, I've heard 200,000 plus property managers across the country.
Right.
And then you figure a lot of those are non-NARPA members. So this is a space that's growing every day.
Yeah.
And I think you're going to see the banking options open up, not just with you guys, but I think the other big boys are going to catch on and say, well, look what they're doing. We need to kind of start copying that because we're already 50 states and all that stuff.
Yeah. I mean, they know, but those big boys are consumer banks. We're business bank. And where you find analysis programs like this is typically with business banks. You're not going to find it with a consumer bank ever. So these Wells Fargo, Bank of America, Chase, they're all consumer banks. They have business divisions, but at the end of the day, they're consumer banks. They make their money typically, I can't speak for them, but typically the majority of them make their money off of fee income.
Oh, God, yeah.
So
we all know that.
Yeah, we don't make our money off of fee income. So we make our money off of our SBA division. That's where I don't work for the SBA division at all, not my forte. I strictly do property management, but we are, for lack of a better phrase, a monster in that industry. And in order for us to continue lending out so much, we have to hold these deposits, right? Mm-hmm. And that's how we make our money. So we make more money off of the spread with SBA just by holding your deposits.
Yeah.
Whereas a Wells Fargo is going to make money by feeing you, you know, $300 for your accounts each month.
Right.
And a lot of these banks, Chase, for instance, is getting out of this completely. And unfortunately, Chase, you know, they're so big that, for instance, up in the corporate level, they know they need to be out of these accounts because they're failing. Maybe more information you care to know, but they're failing these audits called KYC audits. Know your customer, know your industry. Mm-hmm. So it's trickling down to the branches. So for instance, one bank in Northern California, their branch knew, and this was not Chase, this was a different bank, but their branch knew that they were failing this audit rule and they had to get out of property management trust accounts. They actually went ahead and closed an account completely, closed the management company's account. They were already in the process of moving over to Seacoast, but they needed that account open to reconcile. They hadn't even reconciled yet. They actually mm-hmm. closed that account and just issued a check to the company. The company went on a Saturday onto their online banking and saw their account was at zero. They didn't know where this $1 million of trust funds went.
Wow.
Until Monday, and they realized, oh, they just closed their account. But that same bank in a different branch in a different area is still banking a property management company because it hasn't trickled down to them yet.
Yeah. One of the things that we talked about with one of the other members, Tom Sedlak and I, about managing HOAs, and the HOA banking side is a whole nother giant monster.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what people need to understand is it's because of those trust accounts. It's because of the money they get flowing in and out.
Yeah.
It's the reserves they have to keep and all these different things. I mean, Florida's full of HOAs, for example.
Yeah.
And so that banking industry is just, there's big banks have dedicated nothing but branches to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's starting to trickle down into the single family home space, which is what we're talking about. And you guys have been one of the front runners in this. Am I correct?
Yes. Yeah.
It's good to be on good to be on top, right?
Yeah.
Good to be on top. All right. Cool.
We just want to stay there. But to that point, HOAs, they don't answer to the Department of Real Estate in most
states.
That's
right. That's a cheesy workaround, isn't it?
Yeah. So they can really do whatever they want because the way that they treat it, they're not trust accounts at all. They open up each and every account under the Homeowners Association's tin. So it's basically, you know, you get an HOA. For instance, I have an HOA management company in California who manages 20 different associations. So we have 40 accounts. We have an operating account and we have a reserve account. But that's 20 different corporations. So each corporation has two accounts.
Yeah.
So there's no, you don't have to worry about FDIC insurance. You don't have to worry about, you know, signers on trust accounts. You don't have to worry about any of that stuff. The specialty with HOAs is lending. People want to lend to HOAs. You want the HOAs, obviously, because of the deposits.
Yeah.
But the main, when people say I specialize in HOA, it's typically I specialize in HOA lending.
Yeah, they have so much power. I mean, what if you don't pay your dues?
Yeah.
They can lien your home, foreclose on you, all kinds of stuff. It's really getting a little crazy.
Yeah, and they're all their own entities. So there is, I mean, I don't want to knock anybody who says they specialize in HOA, but there isn't so much of a specialty needed in that niche area as there is in trust accounts.
Yeah, because you have to explain this to us.
Yes.
Right? We're kind of dumb sometimes.
Yeah. Well, no, you know what? I mean, again, you guys only go off of what your, you know, you guys open up your rules and regulations by your Department of Real Estate or your Secretary of State, whomever manages you regulates you, and you go by those rules. But let's say, for instance, if the Franchise Tax Board issued a lien on your account, on your corporate TIN, right? If that account is not a true trust account and that lien or levy letter comes in through the bank, they can go ahead and release those funds. And I've seen it happen. So there's many more risks that, in my opinion, are much more important and happen much more often than a failed audit.
Full service platform, like all the cool stuff. You log in online, you see all the accounts.
Yeah.
You can manipulate money as you need to, swap from different accounts as you need to, make deposits, see where deposits are going.
Everything. We save front and back images of all checks that you deposit into the check scanner. We save them up to 7 years on our local system. On your system, it stays for 3 years. You can you can set different security measures. So
right, because we use bookkeepers, and we want them to be able to pull statements to do the reconciliations.
Yeah, but you don't want them to be able to transfer
We don't want them to manipulate money as far as trading it or sending it somewhere else.
Dual authentication. So if you're actually originating your ACH and you're not doing your software's ePay system, if you're originating from the bank, we have dual authorization. So you'll have a key fob, and then you'll also have a PIN as well.
That's a great point, because when paying owners, we're sending out $1 million a month.
Right.
And so you have a very safe way to send out ACH, correct?
Right.
Okay.
And I don't know if anybody ever saw recently, well, maybe a few months ago, an article came out in the Residential Resource about Notchophiles being dangerous. And yeah, it is definitely safer to use your software's ePay system, but Notchophiles are not dangerous. You know, the point that person was trying to say was, because you're saving it to your desktop. But if you're considering going from, Notchophile to now just writing checks out again, that's a lot more dangerous. We see much more fraud with checks. People can, they can wash the account number. They can manipulate anything they want. And that happens much more often.
The softwares that have that pay system, a lot of times they charge up to 50 cents or more one transaction. So if you're paying out 700 owners like we are, 700 times 50 cents, it's a pretty ugly math just to send owner money out.
Right. But actually, a lot of banks will charge that amount as well. I mean, we don't. But as you know, we charge pennies compared to that. But a lot of banks will charge a heavy amount for that. So sometimes it works for them to go with ePay. Again, be with the bank that's going to pay that invoice anyway.
Yeah. So, yeah, it makes a no-brainer. So, Allison, great episode.
Thanks.
Love to have you coming on the show here. Talk to us about how we reach out to you and they can touch you and get a hold of you.
Well, all my information is on our website. I'll give you some information, my contact information as well, if you want
to. Yeah, we'll post it to the show notes and everything.
My email address, can I put it out there?
Absolutely, go ahead.
A Desaro, it's A, D as in David, I, S as in Sam, A-R-R-O at sccombank.com. So it's sccombank.com. We're Seacoast Commerce. A lot of people confuse us with Seacoast, which is headquartered in Florida. We're Seacoast Commerce Bank.
Good point.
Yes.
And the website.
And our website is the sccombank.com. So S as in Sam, C as in Charles, O, M as in Mary, bank, bank.com. I am the one there that specializes in the broker trust accounts, or some people call them client trust accounts as well. But what I would do, just contact me. My phone number, I'll throw it out there. It's my work number, 619-988-6708. And what I'll do is, if you're interested, we'll discuss the basics of your company, but what will help you, see what your bottom line would be, just submitting 3 months of your current bank statements. I'll put everything into a pro forma. Our rate stays the same. Our pricing stays the same. So it takes me all of, an hour unless there's more things that I need to know about your company and I have some more questions. And I just turn it around to you and say, hey, based on this month, this is what you should be earning at Seacoast.
That's going to be a punch in the gut to a lot of folks.
Yeah.
They're going to be like, oh my goodness, why haven't I switched a long time ago?
Yeah. I mean, I have customers who are earning $40,000 a year.
Oh.
And I mean, actually even more than that. Now that I think about it, I have a customer who's earning about $90,000 a year in credits.
So that's big money.
So, it's not interest. It's not going in your pocket, but it is going in your pocket if you're an owner of a company because it's offsetting your operating costs.
Completely. I mean, it's six half one does the other. Okay, cool. Anybody that's listening, when you do switch, be sure you buy me a Bud Light at the next function we are at. We're at the NARPM National Conference.
Yep.
So the next one we'll be at will be potentially the PM Growth Summit, which is coming up in January, February.
Very
I think that's going to be a great event.
Mm-hmm.
So that's pmgrowthsummit.com if you guys want to check that out. You can also use the promo code BRAD, B-R-A-D, to get a $100 discount on the PM Growth Summit. So for anybody listening, they can use that. That's going to be a great event. You guys are going to be there, correct, in San Diego?
We will be there. I'm very excited, yes.
And then next one after that is going to be the Broker Owner.
Broker Owner, I'll be there as well.
Excellent. So this is a great opportunity for those folks to approach you, kind of find out more about it, but I wouldn't wait. This is one of those deals that you just can't wait to implement it.
Yes.
Listen to this podcast over again if you have to, then contact Allison, get in touch with her. Let her do the analysis and you guys are going to be impressed. So thanks for coming on the show. Really
appreciate it. Thank you.
All right, take care.
All right.
Today's show has been sponsored by Virtually Incredible, providing tenant screening services, call center services, and video production services to property managers. You may also visit them at virtuallyincredible.com.
This has been a podcast episode by PropertyManagementProductions.com. Be sure to subscribe to our podcast, leave us feedback, and come back for our next episode.